You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today I'm going to really pick up where I was yesterday, talking about the fact that President Obama is going to make an announcement Wednesday as to his plans for the Islamic State. In other words, what is he going to do about the Islamic State? What I think he's going to do is continue doing what he's doing right now, is continue the airstrikes. We've conducted probably after today about 160 airstrikes. And those are primarily by drones and jet aircraft, primarily from aircraft carrier George H.W. Bush in the Persian Gulf. But I think that's the primary thing that the United States military is doing. Now, they are doing some other things, and that is the Central Intelligence Agency, its contractors, and special operation forces are on the ground in Iraq, and as well as Syria, for that matter. In other words, we already have boots on the ground. We don't have regular armed forces groups on the ground in terms of army divisions or brigades or marine divisions or brigades or battalions. But we do have boots on the ground. So don't fall for this phrase that I don't want to have boots on the ground, because we do have boots on the ground. It's estimated they're probably definitely over 1,000. I think there's more than that. And we should have boots on the ground. Why? We do have a national interest in Iraq. What is that national interest in Iraq? We need to be truthful with the American people. And that's one of my problems with really how both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are handling this. If you tell the American people the truth in the beginning, many of them will support you. Many others won't support you. But trying to mislead them as to what's going on is the mistake, because that ultimately catches up to you. And we have a fundamental problem in the United States today that vast majorities of the American people simply don't trust their government. They don't trust the Republicans, and they don't trust the Democratic Party, and they don't trust their president. That's another way to say they don't believe them. They've been lied to, they've been misled, and they're unhappy. And you see that in the polls, the President Obama's approval ratings down. If you the Gallup poll had him at 38%. I believe the Washington Post, ABC Washington Post poll, he was at 42%. That's not the point as to what the percentage is. The trend has been down, down, and down. He's dropping in the polls, and if you actually go to the polls, which I did, and read the questions and read the answers, you can see there is a general disapproval of both Republicans and Democrats. They think we're on the wrong track, and I think we're on the wrong track, both in economic affairs and in foreign affairs. And I say that because the unemployment rate has been over 6% now through the entire Obama administration. Another way to say that, we have not had a real economic recovery. Yes, the economy has been growing, but been growing at a rate that's literally half of historical rate of around 3%. That's not good, and that means a lot of people are suffering. Now, obviously, if you have a full-time job, a good-paying full-time job, you're not suffering. You're doing all right. But there are millions of Americans, and I would say upwards of 30 million of Americans, that are not doing all right. They're living on savings. They're living on loans from family members. And they're depending more and more on the government for various types of welfare payments, whether it's food stamps. Well, Social Security, many people today are dependent on Social Security payments, but also income if you're on welfare, a welfare check, subsidies for housing, Section 8 housing, for example, and a host of other welfare programs. There are many, many, and I'm not going to list them. But the point is you have not 1 or 2 million or 5 million. You have upwards somewhere between 20 and 30 million people. You have at least 10 million that are unemployed, 9.6 million if you believe the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which I question. But if you use their U6 number, it's much higher than that. It's nearly double that. And then you have people that have part-time jobs that truly want full-time jobs, and that's between 7 and 8 million. And then you have the long-term discouraged worker that has tried for a job, and for whatever reason, a lot of times they're just in the wrong place. They need to move, and eventually they'll figure that out, but have given up looking. And I say that because you have to, when you do these pollings, and this poll does, it has a number of questions on various subjects. But I think we have a president that's a failure. Failure in the economic realm as well as foreign policy. And really, he never should have been elected. He was elected primarily because of identity politics. And that's not a way to elect any president. Because if you do that, you run the risk of having a person in that office that simply is not up to the job, and he's not up to the job. He's very facile. He's a very good reader of speeches, and I have seen some growth in the sense. See, I think he is engaged, by the way. That has been a running debate. The president seems cool, aloof. No, I think he's engaged, but I think that's really a tactic of, you know, he plays a lot of golf. Well, okay, plays a lot of golf. I don't play golf. I sort of grew out of it when I was a teenager, wanted to learn golf. My parents said, sorry, we don't have the money, son. And I gave it up. It was a short, for a couple of weeks, I pleaded with my parents to get me lessons and let me play. But no, it just simply wasn't in the cards. And I understood it and accepted it and moved on and have never since then had any interest in golf. I like to read. That's my passion. I like my time to read what I want to read. Other people don't like to read. Everyone is different. Everyone is an individual. Everyone has their interests, their concerns. But today, if you ask the American people what are their major concerns today, it is the economy, it's jobs. Those are number one and two in any poll. Now what has popped up recently and is getting a lot of attention? Actually, there are two. The Islamic State is now perceived by the vast majority of the American people as a threat. And let me make clear about this. I think they're a threat, but I think the reason why you've had a sudden change and focus in them is obviously the two beheadings of journalists. But you've had in the media today the drums of war being banged on. And what I mean by that, there are people advocating more intervention into Iraq. And I will concede that you won't be able to defeat the Islamic State by just launching airstrikes. You can do damage to them and you can degrade them, but you're not going to defeat them by airstrikes. It never has been. You need to fight them on the ground. But if you're going to do that, you have to ask yourself, well, what is the right strategy? And should the United States be the one to defeat them on the ground? And my answer to that is no, absolutely not. I want them defeated, but not by the United States military. In other words, I'm not for intervention, putting in several divisions or 10 or more brigades, however you want to put the numbers. ISIS is a rather small insurgent army. The numbers vary, but anywhere from 5,000 to 15,000 core members, and what I mean by that is the true believers. And they, and in addition, they are getting new recruits, probably another upwards of 20, 25,000. But here's the problem, or the challenge. They're spread over a wide area in Syria and Iraq. And today what they're fighting is would be considered a conventional war using terrorist tactics to instill fear in anyone that resists them. They're trying to make sure that there's not resistance to their forces. And they want to instill, and they're focused in on that, they want to establish what's called a caliphate, and there's a long history of that. The last one was the Ottoman Empire, and to start in Syria and Iraq, and eventually spread across the Middle East in lands where Islam is the predominant religion, and install a rather fundamentalist version of Islam and have it under Sharia law, where Sharia law is the law of the land. Now, here's the problem. They're trying to provoke the United States to get involved. And I've been guilty of this, and many Americans are guilty of this. Well, let's send in the Marines or the 101st Airborne. Bomb them to kingdom come. That's exactly what the Islamic State wants us to do. Now, that might seem a little bit crazy, but it isn't. It is our involvement in Iraq that got started this insurgency. And it didn't go well the first time, even with the surge. The surge in Iraq was a success militarily, but it failed politically. And that's the key point. If you're going to defeat, first of all, what is the Islamic State militarily trying to do? They're trying to overthrow the existing governments of Iraq and Syria. Now, the United States today is an ally of the existing government in Iraq. However, it too wants to overthrow this Syrian Assad regime. And what you got to understand, especially in Syria, there are a number of militia groups fighting against the Assad regime, but they're also fighting each other. It's a mess. My point is this. You got to keep that in mind. This is an insurgent army that uses terrorist tactics to instill fear in the local population. And it's not all the local population, those that resist them. And they truly want to kill people that don't share their religious views. And that includes Shia, as well as Kurds, Christians, and Western Europeans, U.S. citizens. They will kidnap, if you're lucky, they'll kidnap you, hold you for ransom. If the ransom's not paid, they will kill you. If you're unlucky, they'll shoot you on the spot. And there's plenty of videos online showing that. And they're graphic. And they're not for the faint of heart. That's why you've seen this sudden, out of really nowhere. This wasn't really on the radar of most Americans 90 days ago. It's really been June, July, and August that more and more you'll see in the news, first ISIS and now the Islamic State is. And what has instilled fear is the easy victories that the Islamic State has had in Iraq, capturing some major cities, the second largest city being Mosul, and also pushing out of an area that the Kurds controlled, their Peshmerga, I'm probably mispronouncing it, the military arm of the Kurds. Now what's happening? Well, with the introduction of airstrikes by the United States, some of the Islamic State forces have been pushed back, or rolled back, maybe a better word, but pushed out of the area. We've taken out some of their vehicles. Most of them are Toyota trucks. Yes, they've captured they've captured tanks, Humvees, military vehicles. But a lot of that equipment went back to Syria. And that's something you need to understand. Right today, Syria is somewhat of a refuge. There's really no border between Syria and Iraq anymore. And remember, that border is somewhat arbitrary, was drawn by the French and the British at the end of World War I. People that live in the area constantly are going back and forth. It's like a state boundary. That's a better way to look at it. But my point is this. We can't win in Iraq by playing the game or the strategy that our enemy is trying to force us in. And what they're trying to do is suck the United States in another major intervention in Iraq and in Syria, where they have U.S. soldiers, Marines, Army, Air Force, and some Navy to attack. It didn't work out very well during the first Iraq war. Over 4,000 died, tens of thousands were wounded. And now they're having difficulty getting care at the Veterans Administration. And that is a scandal in and of itself. So I'm not in favor of reintroducing on a very large scale brigade or division size. A brigade is around 3,000 to 3,500. Division, 10 to 15,000, depending on what the purpose of the division is. In other words, stay out. So I'm agreeing with Obama. No boots on the ground in the sense of combat troops. And I think he needs to be clear about that. And I think he needs to be upfront that we do have boots on the ground today. The enemy knows that. He's just confirming what the enemy knows. But the American people need to understand what's going on. Now, I asked in the beginning, what's our national interest in Iraq? It's oil. It's not embassy personnel, and it's not a consulate. At any time, the United States can withdraw all the embassy personnel, diplomatic, whatever reason they're there for, out of the country, as exactly what we did in Libya, and stay out. We don't have to have diplomatic personnel there, nor do we have to have consuls there. Now, I'm not recommending we do that, but the national interest, if you listen to President Obama so far, is those people. They're government employees. Well, I think we should protect them. And I think a lot of that additional boots on the ground, both CIA, security forces, special operators, that's what they're doing. They're beefing up the forces in the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad as well as the consulate in Erbil. Fine. I have no problem with that. I agree with that. I think that's wise. That's prudent. But that's really not our primary national interest in Iraq. Our national interest in Iraq is oil. Let's be forthcoming and honest to the American people. Why are we there? Why are we there? And why are we considering more military force be used in the Syria and Iraq area? It's oil. It's a lot of oil. It's oil and natural gas. And it's transporting those resources primarily to Western Europe through pipelines, some through tankers, some through pipelines, and some of it goes to the United States. And major oil companies, Chevron, ExxonMobil, British Petroleum, Royal Dutch Shell, all have economic interest in Iraq. So candor or honesty, I think, should be of primary importance on this Wednesday speech. Do I think he's going to talk about it? Honestly, I don't think so. I could be surprised, but I truly don't think so. Because I've listened to news, and with very few exceptions, and I don't listen to the newscast regularly, by the way. I more or less sample it. But it's all on the big threat of the Islamic State with no mention as to why is this important? Why are we so concerned about this? In other words, it's the why question. Why are we there? Do you really care what's going on in Iraq and Syria? I'll be honest, I don't, because let me tell you, these people have been killing each other for centuries, for centuries. You have family feuds, you have tribal feuds. You have religious sectarian feuds, and they kill each other. And it's been going on and on and on and on. And to think the United States is going to build a democracy is sheer hubris. It's arrogance, hubris, and really ignorance of the history of the country. And that's one of the problems. It's a big problem in the media, but it's a more serious problem in our army and, to a certain extent, our intelligence, at least on the higher levels. It's not that we don't have the knowledge. There is knowledge, and there are people that truly understand the situation in Iraq and Syria. But they're not the higher levels. They're not at the secretary level or to the director of central intelligence level. But what is the pressure? Why all the concern about Iraq and Syria? Ladies and gentlemen, it is oil, and don't let anyone try to convince you otherwise. And I need to say this, if you want to listen to my show, go to my companion blog for this show, which is pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll have links to the last 60 to 80 shows. At the very bottom, you'll have links to all the past shows except for some of the very earlier ones. But in between, and this is the point, I give you some of my show prep. And this time I put on, I have some videos, and some excellent videos, by the way. Some are short, some are long. If you do have time, I strongly recommend, especially if you want to know more about what's happening and some of the history, to listen to those videos. But I have maps of the various pipelines, and you need to understand you have pipelines that the Russians and the Iranians and the Syrians are supporting, and you have other pipelines that the United States, Iraq, the Saudis, and the Europeans support. You see, the reason why oil is so important, you need it in terms of electrical plants. Natural gas is used as a primary fuel for powering electrical plants, and petroleum is needed to produce both gasoline, diesel, and heating oil. And the gasoline and diesel is used to power vehicles to transport goods and services across the country that has that resource. And the major market is Western Europe. So, see, I'm not surprised that Western Europe oil companies, as well as United States oil companies, are in Iraq. I would expect that. And so, for example, are the Chinese and the Russians. It's the Chinese, though, that truly need the energy. They have some in their own country, but they really need the petroleum and the natural gas. And they have the biggest investment in Iraq. Now, I think there's agreement amongst the American people. I certainly agree that the Islamic State is a threat. I don't see it as big a threat as many are trying to make it out to be, because I think if handled properly, the Islamic State can be annihilated, and that's truly should be the goal, the annihilation of the Islamic State. That means a lot of jihadists are going to be killed. Most of them will be killed, and that should be the goal. To annihilate them to the point that they no longer resist. Now, where I differ with many Americans and many people on the so-called neoconservatives in the Republican Party is that the Americans should intervene again by introducing large numbers of U.S. personnel to do the annihilating. You see, what we have in Iraq today is an insurgency. And what you need is a counter, what's called a COIN, or counterinsurgency strategy. And there have been many successful counterinsurgency strategies that have worked throughout the years. And there's a RAND report, and I have links to it. Let me scroll down. There are two RAND studies. One is called A Broad Approach to Countering the Islamic State. That is fairly short, but it makes the key points. And then they also have, and I have an abstract of it, Paths to Victory. And what they've, what RAND has, RAND Corporation is a research organ, is, the name is Research and Development, but that's the acronym, but they do a lot of research. They do think pieces about problems, and their biggest customers are the Department of Defense, Central Intelligence Agency. They do independent work, and they've looked at past counterinsurgency strategies that have worked as well as what has failed. What has worked, one of the key ingredients is the government that's under siege has to become motivated to do something about it. And that's key, that you need strong motivation. I will say that over and over again. It's up to the Iraqi government and its military forces to get engaged. The same thing with the Kurds. In other words, I don't want the Americans to do their fighting. And that's the temptation that always exists, because we almost always get it wrong. We can win, the United States military can win any nuclear or conventional war. I'm convinced of that. But if you're the Islamic State, you're not going to, you obviously don't have nuclear weapons, nor are they going to engage you if you're there in force in a conventional war. They're going to be engaged in an insurgency, and if they're really pushed back, it'll be a guerrilla war. So when you're fighting either a guerrilla war or an insurgency, you have to have a counterinsurgency strategy. And one of the key ingredients of successful counterinsurgencies that worked and ultimately annihilated or destroyed the insurgents is you need a highly motivated government that's engaged. And that, frankly, is the problem. And President Obama has alluded to it. You see, the reason why the Shia and the Sunnis hate each other is you have Shia militia killing Sunnis and you have Sunni militia killing Shia, and the government is dominated by the Shias. This is a long-standing religious war, sectarian war. And the United States is not going to end that. But until the Iraqi army gets engaged and starts fighting effectively and winning, you're never going to defeat this insurgency. Never. And that doesn't mean introducing more advisors, more training, more equipment. We've tried that. We were in Iraq for 8 years, slightly less than 8 years, but from March of 2003 to December of 2011. And we trained the Iraqi army as well as the national police. And what happened when the Islamic State forces took on the Iraqi army in these cities? They fled. They took off their uniforms and ran. They weren't motivated to defeat the Islamic State. And until they become motivated, that's the result you're going to get. No matter, air support helps. Would help the Iraqi army. No doubt about that. Because with air support, you slow down and to a certain extent diminish the mobility of the Islamic State forces. But to really defeat and destroy the Islamic State, you're going to need the Iraqi army and the Kurdish equivalent to go on the offensive. That's what it's going to take. They have the arms. Now, the Kurds might not have the right ones, and we'll supply them that. And I think that's already been being done. But Americans should not be fighting their battle, and that's what I consider one of the big risks of trying to go in a big way and then have to turn tail in a year. In other words, a big presence of U.S. forces, and then we pull out. That's just repeating past mistakes. Now, the second thing, and this is very, very important, and here's where it gets real sticky. One of the lessons learned, if you will, of defeating an insurgent army or an insurgency is you need to cut off their source of recruits, funds, armaments, arms that they're getting, supplies, their logistics. Where have they been getting their money? And this is not something that's really talked about. From private individuals in Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Qatar, just to name three. And who's been involved with this? The United States has been involved with it for a period of time. Now, why? Why was this happening? Well, the United States wants to overthrow the Assad regime and for a while was funding and as well as shipping arms to the Syrian rebels, so-called FSA, the Free Syrian Army. But then we had second thoughts. But even though we had second thoughts and stopped it at some point, the money kept flowing. The arms kept flowing. And what happened is these groups got stronger. And one of the groups that really has been successful at it is the Islamic State. And remember, they, although they've changed their name several times, in 2006, just before the surge, they were called Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And the reason why they were successful is the Sunnis initially supported them, because they were tired of being attacked by Shia militia. Now, the surge worked in that many of the Sunnis, for example, in Anbar province, began to support the United States forces when they were convinced that our military could track down and kill these terrorists. But what we've seen, and this is something, it might sound picky, but it isn't. Most of the people are referring them to terrorists. And I'll be the first to say, yes, they engage in terrorist tactics against their enemies, but that's not their focus. It's not global terrorism. What do they want to do? They want to have an Islamic State of Syria and Iraq where Sharia law is the rule of the land. Obviously, they're in power, and they want to spread their fundamentalist version of Islam. That's their goal. And if we go in and, frankly, persist in these airstrikes, what's going to happen? A, they're still going to get recruits, and they're getting recruits. Because many of the people that are coming or rallying around the Islamic State banner, where were they radicalized? Many of them in the jails of Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Iraq, Syria. That's where they were radicalized. And they want the United States to come in. So you don't play their game. Because to successfully win an insurgency, first you got to cut off their support, both locally and from outside. And that's key. Until you do that, you'll never defeat them. And by the U.S. getting heavily involved in this, including airstrikes, and to the extent we send troops, it's self-defeating. Because for every one you kill, you're going to get many, many more rallying to their side. And that's the problem. I'm looking at the clock. I'm running out of time. But I will continue a little bit more tomorrow. But keep in mind, keep asking yourself, what's the national interest? And what's the best strategy to truly annihilate the Islamic State? And it is not an aggressive interventionist strategy. That has been tried and lose as loss. You need the local people engaged and motivated to defeat this. And that's the only way you're ever going to degrade, destroy, and annihilate the Islamic State. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.